All right, we are continuing chapter 23 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Harry awoke very suddenly on Christmas Day. Wondering what had caused his abrupt return to consciousness, he opened his eyes and saw something with very large, round, green eyes staring back at him in the darkness. So close, they were almost nose to nose. "Dobby!" Harry yelled, scrambling away from the elf so fast he almost fell out of bed. "Don't do that!"
"Dobby is sorry, sir!"
squeaked Dobby anxiously, jumping backward with his long fingers over his mouth.
"Dobby is only wanting to wish Harry Potter a Merry Christmas and bring him a present, sir. Harry Potter did say Dobby could come and see him sometime, sir."
"It's okay," said Harry, breathing rather faster than usual, while his heart rate returned to normal. Just prod me or something in the future, all right? Don't bend over like that." Harry pulled back the curtains around his four-poster, took his glasses from his bedside table, and put them on. His yell had awoken Ron, Seamus, Dean, and Neville. All of them were peering through the gaps in their own hangings, heavy-eyed and tussle-haired. "Someone attacking you, Harry?" Seamus asked sleepily. "Nah, it's just Dobby," Harry muttered. "Go back to sleep." "Nah, presents," Seamus said, spotting the large pile at the foot of his bed. Ron, Dean, and Neville decided that they were now that they were awake, they might as well get some present opening up, too. Harry turned back to Dobby, who was now standing nervously next to Harry's bed, still looking worried that he had upset Harry. There was a Christmas bauble tied to the loop on top of his tea cozy. What's a bauble?
An ornament.
Like one of those round things?
Yep.
Okay. That's a funny word. Bauble. Mm-hmm.
"Can Dobby give Harry Potter his present?" he squeaked tentatively.
"Of course he can," said Harry. "I've got something for you, too." It was a lie. He hadn't bought anything for Dobby at all. But he opened his trunk and pulled out a particularly knobbly, rolled-up pair of socks. They were his oldest and foulest, mustard yellow, and once belonged to Uncle Vernon. The reason they were extra knobbly was that Harry had been using them to cushion his sneakoscope for over a year now. He pulled out the sneakoscope and handed the socks to Dobby, saying, "Sorry, I forgot to wrap them." Harry's such a gentleman.
He's so jerky.
I know. But Dobby was utterly delighted.
"Socks are Dobby's favorite clothes, sir,"
he said, ripping off his odd ones and pulling on Uncle Vernon's.
"I have 7 pairs now, but sir,"
he said, his eyes widening, having pulled both socks up to their highest extent so they reached the bottom of his shorts.
"They have made the mistake in the shop, Harry Potter. It is giving you 2 of the same."
"Ah, no, Harry, how come you didn't spot that?" said Ron, grinning over from his own bed, which was now strewn with wrapping paper. "Tell you what, Dobby, here you go. Take these 2, and you can mix them up properly. And here's your sweater." He threw Dobby a pair of violet socks he'd just unwrapped, and the hand-knitted sweater Mrs. Weasley had sent him. Dobby looked overwhelmed.
"Sir is very kind,"
he said, his eyes brimming with tears again, bound deeply to Ron.
"Dobby knew Sir must be a great wizard, for he's Harry Potter's greatest friend. And Dobby did not know that he was also generous of spirit, as noble as selfless."
"They're only socks," said Ron, who had gone slightly pink around the ears, though he looked rather pleased all the same. "Wow, Harry," he had just opened Harry's present, a Chudley Cannon hat. "Cool," he jammed it on his head, where it clashed horribly with his hair. Dobby now handed Harry a small package, which turned out to be socks.
"Dobby is making them himself, sir,"
said the elf happily.
"He's buying the wool out of his wages, sir."
The left sock was bright red and had a pair of broomsticks upon it. The right sock was green with a pattern of snitches. They're really... "Well, thanks, Dobby," said Harry. "That's such a jerk." And he pulled them on.
They look adorable.
What's that?
They look Christmassy and they're Quidditch themed.
Exactly.
Dobby's clever. Dobby could be a fashion designer.
You think so?
Yeah.
And he pulled them on, causing Dobby's eyes to leak with happiness again.
"Dobby must go now, sir. We is already making Christmas dinners in the kitchen,
said Dobby, and he hurried out of the dormitory, waving goodbye to Ron and the others as he passed. Harry's other presents were much more satisfactory than Dobby's odd socks, with the obvious exception of... I know. But Harry's a materialistic jerk, so...
Well, so am I, but...
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Nope. You would appreciate... What's that?
I said those are adorable.
I know. And the effort he put into them.
I know, he made them. He made them.
It's crazy. Anyways, so Harry's other presents were much more satisfactory than Dobby's odd socks, with the obvious exception of the Dursleys, which consisted of a single tissue, an all-time low. Harry supposed they too were remembering the Tun Tung Toffee.
I read that in something like on Wikipedia the other day.
Yeah.
I had never understood what it was. Because, like, if you hear it...
Yeah.
It just sounds like tongue.
I know, I know.
Instead of tongue.
Because I don't enunciate as a problem.
It's not your fault. It's just that that's like a weird, it's such a weird thing. Mm-hmm. So when I read it, I was like, ah!
Yeah. Hermione had given Harry a book called Quidditch Teams of Britain and Ireland. Ron, a bulging bag of dung bombs. Sirius, a handy penknife with attachments to unlock any lock and undo any knot. That's convenient.
Yeah.
See, they can make such ridiculously awesome shit.
I know.
What's wrong with them? And Hagrid, a vast box of sweets, including Harry's all-time favorites. Birdie's Bott's Every Flavor Beans, Chocolate Frogs, Drubal's Best Blowing Gum, and Fizzing Weasbiz.
Oh, yum.
There was also, of course, Mrs. Weasley's usual package, including a new sweater, green with a picture of a dragon on it. Harry supposed Charlie had told her all about the horntail. And a large quantity of homemade mince pies. Harry and Ron met up with Hermione in the common room, and they went down to breakfast together. They spent most of the morning in Gryffindor Tower, where everyone was enjoying their presents. Wait, what did Harry get for Ron and Hermione?
He got Ron the Chubbly Cannon's hat. And we don't know what he got for Hermione.
Oh, he got that for Ron? I thought that was one of Harry's presents that Ron thought was cool.
No.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Then they returned to the Great Hall for a magnificent lunch, which included at least 100 turkeys and Christmas puddings and large piles of cribbage wizarding crackers.
You know, the crackers that you pull and... makes like a popping noise and something comes out.
I don't remember those.
Okay. I think it's a Christmas thing.
Okay. They went out onto the grounds in the afternoon. The snow was untouched except for the deep channels made by the Durmstrang and Beauxbatons students on the way up to the castle. Hermione chose to watch Harry and the Weasleys snowball fight rather than join in. And at 5 o'clock, she said she was going back upstairs to get ready for the ball. What, you need 3 hours? Said Ron, looking at her incredulously and paying for his lapse in concentration with a large snowball thrown by George, hitting him hard in the side of the head. Who are you going with? He yelled after Hermione, but she just waved and disappeared up the stone steps into the castle.
Okay, can we have, like, a really fancy date up in the future or something? Because that's always really fun to get ready for.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Like, dances and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, maybe for our anniversary.
Sure. You're very pretty.
I'm not. You're
so, no, you're so pretty. There was no Christmas tea today, as the ball included a feast. So at 7 o'clock, when it had become hard to aim properly, the others abandoned their snowball fight and trooped back to the common room. The fat lady was sitting in her frame with her friend Violet from downstairs, both of them extremely tipsy. Empty boxes of chocolate liqueur is littering the bottom of the picture. Larry Fights, that's the one, she giggled when they gave the password, and she swung forward to let them inside. Harry, Ron, Seamus, Dean, and Neville changed into their dress robes up in the dormitory, all of them looking very self-conscious, but none as much as Ron, who surveyed himself in the long mirror in the corner with an appalled look on his face. There was just no getting around the fact that his robes looked more like a dress than anything else. In a desperate attempt to make them look more manly, he used a severing charm on the ruffs and cuffs. It worked fairly well, at least he was now lace-free, although he hadn't done a very neat job, and the edges looked depressingly frayed as the boys set off downstairs. "I still can't work out how you two got the best-looking girls in this year," muttered Dean. "Wait, the best-looking girls? Parvati and her, sister?"
"I guess they're really pretty. They're Indian, so they're exotic-looking."
"Yeah, but I didn't... They've never mentioned the fact that they're the best-looking girls in the class."
"Well, now we know they are, so keep reading."
"All right. Animal magnetism," said Ron gloomily, pulling stray threads out of his cuffs. The common room looked strange, full of people wearing different colors instead of the usual mass of black. Parvati was waiting for Harry in the foot of the stairs. She looked very pretty indeed, in robes of shocking pink, with her long dark plait braided with gold, and gold bracelets glimmering at her wrists. Harry was relieved to see that she wasn't giggling. "You look nice," he said awkwardly. "Thanks," she said. "Padma's going to meet you in the entrance hall," she added to Ron. "Should she have an Indian accent? I never thought of that."
"No."
"Okay.
She's not from India. She's just Indian."
"I gotcha. Oh, gotta plug in." Right, said Ron, looking around. "Where's Hermione?" Parvati shrugged. "Shall we go down then, Harry?" "Okay," Harry said, wishing he could just stay in the common room. Fred winked at Harry as he passed him out of the way, on his way out of the portrait hole. But Fred's thinking that Harry's gonna get lucky.
I'm pretty sure Fred is aware that Harry doesn't know how to get lucky yet.
It seems like Harry doesn't want to even think about that, you know? Like...
he's secretly gay.
Gotcha. The entrance hall was packed with students, too, all milling around waiting for 8 o'clock, when the doors to the Great Hall would be thrown open. Those people who were meeting partners from different houses were edging around through the crowd trying to find one another. Parvati found her sister, Padma, and led her over to Harry and Ron. "Hi," said Padma, who looked just as pretty as Parvati in robes of bright turquoise. She didn't look too enthusiastic about having Ron as a partner, though. Her dark eyes lingered on the frayed neck and sleeves of his dress robes as she looked him up and down. "Hi," said Ron, not looking at her, but staring around at the crowd. "Oh, no." He bent his knees slightly to hide behind Harry because Fleur de la Cour was passing, looking stunning in robes of silver-gray satin, accompanied by the Ravenclaw Quidditch captain, Roger Davies. Why is he afraid of her?
Because he asked her out and she, like, rejected him really meanly.
So just, like, ignore. I think she's a jerk and...
I know.
Yeah.
Remember what you said about being that age as a boy.
Yeah, I know. When they disappeared, Ron stood straight again and stared over the heads of the crowd. "Where is Hermione?" he said again. A group of Slytherins came up from the steps from their dungeon common room. Malfoy was in front. He was wearing dress robes of black velvet with a high collar, which in Harry's opinion made him look like a vicar. Hansy Parkinson, in very frilly robes of pale pink, was clutching Malfoy's arm. Crabbe and Goyle were both wearing green. They resembled moss-colored boulders, and neither of them, Harry was pleased to see, had managed to find a partner. Or maybe they're going together? Come on, Harry, don't be so, you know...
close-minded.
Yeah, exactly. This is the 21st century here.
It's for sure.
That would be a really bad fan fiction spin-off, Crabbe and Goyle.
That would be.
Oh, man. The oak front doors opened, and everyone turned to look as the Durmstrang students entered with Professor Karkaroff. Crumb was at the front of the party, accompanied by a pretty girl in blue robes Harry didn't know. Over their heads, he saw that an area of lawn, right in front of the castle, had been transformed into a sort of grotto full of fairy lights, meaning hundreds of actual living fairies were sitting in the rose bushes that had been conjured there, and fluttering over the statues of what seemed to be Father Christmas and his reindeer. Then Professor McGonagall's voice called, "Champions, over here, please!" Parvati readjusted her bangles, beaming. What's a bangle?
The bracelets.
Oh, okay. She and Harry...
What's a bangle? It's a kind of tiger.
Well, I mean...
Also a province in India.
Parvati, right? I mean, she's got some tigers. No?
Actually, what it comes from is the Bengali province in India.
Yeah.
Which is where the word for the bangle probably came, like, from, you know, in English, we probably just called them bangles.
Yeah.
As kind of almost a derisive term. So, yeah.
That's it. Beaming. She and Harry said, "See you in a minute," to Ron and Padma, and walked forward, the chattering crowd parting to let them through. Professor McGonagall, who was wearing dress robes of red tartan and had arranged a rather ugly wreath of thistles around the brim of her hat, had told them to wait on one side of the doors while everyone else went inside. They were to enter the great hall in procession when the rest of the students sat down. Fleur de la Cour and Roger Davies stationed themselves nearest the doors. Davies looked so stunned by his good fortune in having Fleur for a partner that he could hardly take his eyes off of her. Cedric and Cho were close to Harry, too. He looked away from them so he wouldn't have to talk to them. His eyes fell instead on the girl next to Crumb. His jaw dropped. It was Hermione. But she didn't look like Hermione at all. She had done something with her hair. It was no longer bushy, but sleek and shiny, and twisted up in an elegant knot at the back of her head. She was wearing robes made of floaty, periwinkle blue material, and she was holding herself differently, somehow. Maybe it was merely the absence of the 20 or so books she usually slung over her back. She was also smiling, rather nervously, it was true, but the reduction in the size of her front teeth was more noticeable than ever. Harry couldn't understand how he hadn't spotted it before. "Hi, Harry," she said. "Hi, Parvati." Parvati was gazing at Hermione in unflattering disbelief. She wasn't the only one, either. When the doors to the Great Hall opened, Crumb's fan club from the library stalked past, throwing Hermione looks of deepest loathing. Pansy Parkinson gaped at her as she walked by with Malfoy, and even he didn't seem to be able to find an insult to throw at her. Ron, however, walked right past Hermione without looking at her. Once everyone else was settled in the hall, Professor McGonagall told the champions and their partners to get in line in pairs and to follow her. They did so, and everyone in the great hall applauded as they entered and started walking up toward the large round table at the top of the hall where the judges were sitting. The walls of the hall had all been covered in sparkling silver frost, with hundreds of garlands of mistletoe and ivy crossing the starry black ceiling. The house tables had vanished. Instead, there were about 100 smaller lantern-lit ones, each seating about a dozen people. Harry concentrated on not tripping. Parvati seemed to be enjoying herself. She was beaming around at everybody, steering Harry so forcefully that he felt as though he were a show dog she was putting through its paces. I know that.
Is that what I do to you?
No.
Do I?
Just a bit. He caught sight of Ron and Padma as he neared the top table. Ron was watching Hermione pass with narrowed eyes. Padma was looking sulky. Dumbledore smiled happily as the champions approached the top table, but Karkaroff wore an expression remarkably like Ron's as he watched Crumb and Hermione draw nearer. Ludo Bagman, tonight in robes of bright purple with large yellow stars, was clapping as enthusiastically as any of the students, and Madame Maxime, who had changed her usual uniform of black satin for a flowering gown of lavender silk, was applauding them politely. But Mr. Crouch, Harry suddenly realized, was not there. The fifth seat of the table was occupied by Percy Weasley. When the champions and their partners reached the table, Percy, drew out the empty chair beside him, staring pointedly at Harry. Harry took the hint and sat down next to Percy, who was wearing brand new navy blue dress robes and an expression of such smugness that Harry thought it ought to be fined. "I've been promoted," he said, before Harry could even ask. And from his tone, he might have been announcing his election as supreme ruler of the universe. "I'm now Mr. Crouch's personal assistant, and I'm here representing him." "Why didn't he come?" Harry asked. He wasn't looking forward to being lectured on cauldron bottoms all through dinner. "I'm afraid to say Mr. Crouch isn't well, not well at all. Hasn't been right since the World Cup. Hardly surprising. Overwork. He's not as young as he once was, though still quite brilliant, of course. The mind remains as great as it ever was. The World Cup was a fiasco for the whole ministry, and then Mr. Crouch suffered a huge personal shock with the misbehavior of that house elf of his, Blinky or whatever she was called. Naturally, he dismissed her immediately afterwards, but, well, I say, he's getting on. He needs looking after, and I think he's found a definite drop in his house comforts after she left. And then we had the tournament to arrange and the aftermath of a cup to deal with. That revolting Skeeter woman buzzing around. No, poor man. He's having a well-earned, quiet Christmas. I'm just glad he knew he had someone he could rely on to take his place." Harry wanted very much to ask whether Mr. Crouch had stopped calling Percy Weatherby yet, but resisted the temptation. There was no food yet on the glittering golden plates, but small menus were lying in front of each of them. Harry picked his up uncertainly and looked around. There were no waiters. Dumbledore, however, looked carefully at his own menu and then said very clearly to his plate, "Pork chops." And pork chops appeared. Getting the idea, the rest of the table placed their orders with their plates, too. Harry glanced up at Hermione to see how she felt about this new and more complicated method of dining. Surely it meant extra work for the house elves. But for once, Hermione didn't seem to be thinking about SPEW. She was deep in talk with Victor Crumb, and hardly seemed to notice what she was eating. It now occurred to Harry that he had never actually heard Crumb speak before, but he was talking now, and very enthusiastically at that. Now, wait, what accent was he? Romanian or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Some sort of Russian. Generic Russian.
Yeah, sure.
Well, we have a castle also. Not as big as this, nor as comfortable, I'm thinking. Ugh, that was bad. Let me try that again.
You always think that your accents are bad, and, like, it's annoying. They're good.
Sorry, I won't say they're bad anymore. He was telling Hermione. We have just four floors, and the fires are lit only by magical purposes. But we have grounds even larger than these, though in winter we have very little daylight, so we are not enjoying them. But in summer we are flying out every day over the lakes and the mountains. Now, Victor, said Karkaroff with a laugh that didn't reach his cold eyes. Don't go giving away anything else now, or your charming friend will know exactly how to find us. Dumbledore smiled, his eyes twinkling. Igor, all this secrecy. One would think you almost didn't want visitors. Well, Dumbledore, said Karkaroff, displaying his yellowing teeth to their fullest extent. We are all protective of our private domains, are we not? Do we not jealously guard the halls of learning that have been entrusted to us? Are we not right to be proud that we alone know our school's secrets and right to protect them? Oh, I would never dream of assuming I knew all Hogwarts secrets, Igor, said Dumbledore amicably. Only this morning, for instance, I took a wrong turn on the way to the bathroom and found myself in a beautifully proportioned room I've never seen before, containing a rather magnificent collection of chamber pots. When I went back to investigate more closely, I discovered that the room had vanished, but I must keep an eye out for it. Possibly it is only accessible at 5:30 in the morning, or maybe only appear at the quarter moon, or when the seeker has an exceptionally full bladder. Harry snorted in his plate of goulash. Percy frowned, but Harry could have sworn Dumbledore had given him a very small wink. Meanwhile, Fleur Delacour was criticizing the Hogwarts decorations to Roger Davies. This is nothing. No, wait, she's French. This is nothing, she said dismissively, looking around at the sparkling walls of the great hall.
This is nothing.
Nothing. As the palace of Beaubaton, we have ice sculptures around the dining chamber at Christmas. They do not melt, of course. They are like huge statues of diamond glittering around the place, and the food is simply superb. We have choirs of wood nymphs with serenados as we eat. We have none of this ugly armor in the halls. If a poltergeist ever entered in Beaubaton, you'd be expelled like that. She slapped her hand on the table impatiently. Roger Davies was watching her talk with a very dazed look on his face, and kept missing his mouth with the fork. Roger wants to get lucky, too. Harry had the impression that Davies was too busy staring at Fleur to take in a word she was saying. Absolutely right, he said quickly, slapping his own hand down on the table in imitation of Fleur. Like that, yeah. Harry looked around the hall. Hagrid was sitting at one of the other staff tables. He was back in the horrible brown suit and gazing up at the top table. Harry saw him give a small wave, and looking around, saw Madame Maxime return it, her opals glittering in the candlelight. Hermione was now teaching Crumb to say her name properly. He kept calling her Hermione.
I like that, though.
Yeah. Hermione, she said slowly and clearly. Hermonini. Close enough, she said, catching Harry's eye and grinning. When all the food had been consumed, Dumbledore stood up and asked the students to do the same.
Sounds like Harry's being a bad date, though.
What?
Sounds like Harry is being a bad date.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be paying any attention. Oh my god, this chapter is so long.
Okay, you can end it.
Okay. Wow. Oh my god. Yeah. Okay. With a wave of his wand, all the tables zoomed back along the walls, leaving the floor clear, and then he conjured a raised platform into existence along the right wall. A set of drums, several guitars, a lute, a cello, and some bagpipes were set upon it. The weird sisters now trooped up to the stage to wildly enthusiastic applause. They were all extremely hairy and dressed in black robes that had been artfully ripped and torn. Are they like a goth band or something?
Yeah.
They picked up their instruments, and Harry, who'd been so interested in watching them that he'd almost forgotten what was coming, suddenly realized that the lanterns on all the other tables had gone out, and the other champions and their partners were standing up. Come on, Parvati hissed. We're supposed to dance. Harry tripped over his dress robes as he stood up. The weird sisters struck up a slow, mournful tune. Harry walked onto the brightly lit dance floor, carefully avoiding anyone's eye. He could see Seamus and Dean waving at him and snickering. In the next moment, Parvati had seized his hands, placing one around her waist and holding the other tightly in hers. It wasn't as bad as it could have been, Harry thought, revolving slowly on the spot. Parvati was steering. He kept his eyes fixed over the heads of the watching people, and soon very many of them, too, had come onto the dance floor, so that the champions were no longer the center of attention. Neville and Ginny were dancing nearby. You could see Ginny wincing frequently as Neville trod on her feet. And Dumbledore was waltzing with Madame Maxime. He was so dwarfed.
That had to look ridiculous.
Yeah. He was so dwarfed by her that the top of his pointed hat barely tickled her chin. However, she moved very gracefully for a woman so large. Mad-Eye Moody was doing an extremely ungainly two-step with Professor Sinistra, who was nervously avoiding his wooden leg. Nice socks, Potter, Moody growled as he passed, his magical eyes staring through Harry's robes. Oh yeah, Dobby the House Elf knitted them for me, said Harry, grinning. He's so creepy, Parvati whispered as Moody clunked away. I don't think that I should be allowed. Harry heard the final quavering note from the bagpipe, but with relief. The weird sisters stopped playing. Applause filled the hall once more, and Harry let go of Parvati. Let's sit down, shall we? Oh, but this is a really good one, Parvati said, as the weird sisters struck up a new one, which was much faster. No, I don't like it, Harry lied, and he led her away from the dance floor, past Fred and Angelina, who were dancing so exuberantly that people around them were backing away in fear of injury. and over to the table where Ron and Padma were sitting. Who's George going with? They haven't said him. How's it going? Harry asked Ron, sitting down and opening a bottle of butterbeer. Ron didn't answer. He was glaring at Hermione and Crumb, who were dancing nearby. Padma was sitting with her arms and legs crossed, one foot jiggling in time to the music. Every now and then, she threw a disgusted look at Ron, who was now completely ignoring her. Parvati sat down on Harry's other side, crossed her arms and legs too, and within minutes was asked to dance by a boy from Beauxbatons. You don't mind, do you, Harry? Parvati said. What? Said Harry, who was now watching Cho and Cedric. Oh, never mind, snapped Parvati, and she went off with the boy from Beauxbatons. When the song ended, she did not return. They are not being good dates.
They're being horrible dates. I'd be so pissed.
Hermione came over and sat down in Parvati's empty chair. She was a bit pink in the face from dancing. Hi, said Harry. Ron didn't say anything. It's hot, isn't it? Hermione said, fanning herself with one hand. Victor's just gone to get some drinks. Ron gave her a withering look. Victor, he said. Hasn't he asked you to call him Vicky yet? Hermione looked at him in surprise. What's up with you? She said. If you don't know, said Ron scathingly, I'm not going to tell you. Hermione stared at him, and then at Harry, who shrugged. Ron, what? He's from Durmstrang, spat Ron. He's competing against Harry. Against Hogwarts. You're... Ron was obviously casting around for words strong enough to describe Hermione's crime. Fraternizing with the enemy, that's what you're doing. I don't think that's the reason Ron's so pissed.
You think, honey?
Hermione's mouth fell open. Don't be so stupid, she said after a moment. The enemy? Honestly. Who was the one who was all excited when they saw him arrive? Who's the one who wanted his autograph? Who got a model of him up in their dormitory? Ron chose to ignore this. I suppose he asked you to come with him while you were both in the library? Yes, he did, said Hermione, the pink patches on her cheeks growing more brightly. So what? What happened? Trying to get him to join Spew, were you? No, I wasn't, if you really want to know. He said he'd been coming up to the library every day to try to talk to me, but he hadn't been able to pluck up the courage. Hermione said this very quickly and blushed so deeply that she was the same color as Parvati's robes. Yeah, well, that's his story, said Ron nastily. What's that supposed to mean? Obvious, isn't it? He's Karkaroff's student, isn't he? He knows who you hang around with. He's just trying to get closer to Harry, get inside information on him.
Oh, that's mean.
Or get near enough to jinx him. Hermione looked as though Ron had slapped her. When she spoke, her voice quivered. For your information, he hasn't asked me one single thing about Harry, not one. Ron changed tack at the speed of light. Then he's hoping you'll help him find out what his egg means. I suppose you've been putting your heads together during those cozy little library sessions. I'd never help him work out that egg, Hermione said, looking outraged. Never. How can you say something like that? I want Harry to win the tournament. Harry knows that, don't you, Harry? You've got a funny way of showing it, sneered Ron. The whole tournament's supposed to be about getting to know foreign wizards and making friends with them, said Hermione hotly. No, it isn't, shouted Ron. It's about winning. People were starting to stare at them. Ron, said Harry quietly, I haven't gotten a problem with Hermione coming with Crumb. But Ron ignored Harry, too. Why don't you go and find Vicky? He'll be wondering where you are. Don't call him Vicky. Hermione jumped to her feet and stormed across the dance floor, disappearing into the crowd. Ron watched her go with a mixture of anger and satisfaction on his face. Are you going to ask me to dance at all? Padma asked him. No, said Ron, still glaring after Hermione. Fine, said Padma, and she got up and went to join Parvati and the Beauxbatons boy, who conjured up one of his friends to join them so fast that Harry could have sworn he had zoomed him there by a summoning charm. Well, apparently they're the two hottest girls in the class.
I know.
Man, Harry and Ron are so dumb.
I know.
There's Hermione, said a voice.
Crumb had just arrived at their table, clutching two butter beers. "No idea," said Ron mulishly, looking up at him. "Lost her, have you?" Crumb was looking surly again. "Vale, if you see her, tell her I have drinks," he said, and he slouched off. "Made friends with Victor Crumb, have you, Ron?" Percy bustled over, rubbing his hands together and looking extremely pompous. "Excellent. That's the whole point, you know. International magical cooperation."
To Harry's, maybe we should stop here.
Maybe in a few sentences, yeah, but that's kind of a weird place to stop.
Well, okay. To Harry's displeasure, Percy now took Padma's vacated seat. The top table was now empty. Professor Dumbledore was dancing with Professor Sprout, Ludo Bagman with Professor McGonagall. Madame Maxime and Hagrid were cutting a wide path around the dance floor as they waltzed through the students, and Karkaroff was nowhere to be seen. When the next song ended, everybody applauded once more, and Harry saw Ludo Bagman kiss Professor McGonagall's hand and make his way back through the crowd, at which point Fred and George accosted him. "What do you think they're doing, annoying senior ministry members?" Percy hissed, watching Fred and George suspiciously. "No respect." Ludo Bagman shook off Fred and George quickly, however, and spotted Harry, waved, and came over to their table. Maybe we should stop there?
Yeah.
Because they get into, like, a really long conversation.
Yeah, it sounds good.
So. Okay. Okay, kitty. I'll say goodnight in the recording first. Love you so much. You're the sweetest girl ever. You were re-read for 37 minutes. I love you, kitty. Have a nice little sleep. Sweet dreams. Maybe.